Welcome to the Technology in Healthcare e-learning session. In the session, we're going to be talking about the use of computer and information technology. For example, information systems such as Meditech, which is used at the Countess, Cerner Millennium, which is in the process of being implemented at Arrow Park Hospital, and PCIS, which is the system currently in use at Arrow Park Hospital. We're also going to look at those systems and services that have been developed and supplied as part of the Connecting for Health initiative, which you've probably heard about. These include things such as PACS, which is Picture Archiving and Communication System, or electronic x-rays, electronic prescriptions, and the National Care Records Service. We're going to cover how information is collected and used. For example, where is it collected, who buy, who uses it, and for what purposes. We're also going to look at the benefits of technology. We have to remember that billions of pounds are being spent on IT in the NHS, so it's only reasonable that there should be some benefits. We're going to look at some of those, and we're also going to be looking at some of the potential disadvantages. We're going to talk about patient safety. The introduction of technology into healthcare has had a positive and a negative effect on patient safety. On the one hand, technology can be used to support patient safety. But on the other, it can actually be the cause of patient safety issues itself, and some of them very serious issues. We're going to be looking at what we need to know as individuals. As healthcare professionals, there are certain things we need to know if we're to use information systems to support and help managing patient care in a way that does not leave us vulnerable to legal or professional problems, or even compromise patient care. We're also going to be looking at professional issues. So what are the implications to us as healthcare professionals using information technology? We need to think about our responsibilities and obligations around things like record keeping, confidentiality and security. You can work through the session in any order, but it's suggested that you start with the overview before returning to the main menu. Once you've worked through the session, you can download the session notes, which contain some activities, by clicking on the notes link at the bottom of the screen. Nurses and other healthcare staff are increasingly being required to use technology to support their work. In a typical day, a healthcare worker might access a patient information system to view details of interventions, the care given, to order tests, to see test results, as well as perhaps look up clinical correspondence and to create or view referrals, care plans, and other information. Some systems now have status boards, which help with workflow and the provision of care by alerting users to interventions that need to be carried out, or to time-critical activities that are being approached, for example giving medication or turning a patient. Out-of-hours medication may be available using the computerised dispensing system. The handover sheet may be printed out from the system and be pre-filled with information. Policies and procedures are being made available on organisational intranets, along with knowledge bases such as the BNF and the Royal Marsden Manual of Clinical Nursing Procedures. Traditional film x-rays have given way to digital ones that can be viewed almost anywhere and never get lost. In addition to these, you're also likely to use an email system and to use the organisation's internet or intranet as well. All of this makes huge demands on staff in terms of new or extra competencies, process changes and time management. For example, systems can be set up to automatically send a referral to a specialist nurse if a specified care plan is created, or they can automatically email a patient's GP with treatment and medication information when they're discharged. But what does this mean to organisations and to the staff that work in them? Organisations need to find the resources to develop and support these systems and the underpinning technology infrastructure, such as equipment and computer networks, that support the systems. This means finance, project management expertise, change management expertise, and suitable staff all need to be provided. All staff will require some training, and this will need to be repeated as new systems are introduced and existing ones enhanced. Individuals will also need to make sure that they're competent in the use of their organisation's systems, that they understand the legal issues around consent, data protection and computer misuse. They also need to appreciate that there are professional issues that may leave them open to disciplinary action, including dismissal by their organisation, the police, the NMC or even all three. So, do you know what legislation and guidance you need to be aware of? Do you know what the impact of taking shortcuts might be? Do you appreciate how important the correct use of systems is to the organisation, to the Department of Health, and to individual patients? What are the issues around using computer systems rather than paper-based notes? Do you know what clinical risk issues there might be? This session is going to look in detail at these and other issues, as well as looking at the potential risks and benefits that introducing technology can bring. All organisations have an IT department, or get IT services from another organisation. All IT departments are structured a little differently, though they generally provide similar services. Within the IT department, you have the information management staff. They have a number of roles. Clinical coders code patient episodes for contracting and producing statistics. Clinical coders do this by looking at the patient record and identifying diagnosis and procedures and assigning clinical codes to them. This is important because if this information is not coded, then the organisation can't reliably produce statistics for management or for invoices, so they get paid by the purchasers. The main purchasers being PCTs. Information management staff also look after the data in the systems, checking for completeness and data quality, and ensuring the right data is collected to support the organisation. So they have very close working links with senior management and the finance department. They also produce activity and statistical reports for use both internally, for example monitoring performance against targets, and externally by the Department of Health as well, for benchmarking clinical performance against other organisations, which is important for clinical governance. There'll usually be a group of staff responsible for system development. Working practices and information requirements change on a regular basis. This group of people will make sure that the systems support the clinical and administrative processes and work closely with clinical and administrative staff, as well as having close working relationships with information management staff. There are often clinical staff, such as nurses, pharmacists and therapy staff, in these teams who are able to give insights into the care processes the system should be supporting. The number of staff will be employed in system support. These are the people who answer the phone on the help desk and provide help to end users when they have a problem. Usually included in this group are the system trainers, who will train the administrative and clinical staff that use the systems. Technical support staff look after the computers, printers, computer cabling and network, and maintain corporate systems such as email and the intranet. Without this group of staff, computers and other equipment wouldn't be repaired or upgraded, or any software installed. Some key functions are provided and supported by the IT department. For example, clinical governance. The information requirements of clinical governance are supported in a number of ways. The development and support of audit and risk management systems, producing information on mortality, infection rates, lengths of stay and clinical incidents. There are also opportunities for building in decision support and knowledge to systems. For example, alerting a prescriber to drug interactions or contraindications, and other carers to combinations of information in the record, such as an abnormal early warning score or high risk scores in other assessments. Comprehensive electronic records have greatly improved an organisation's ability to investigate and resolve complaints and defend against litigation. Where paper-based records can be illegible, incomplete or easily lost, maybe disorganised, electronic records are legible, don't get lost and are available in more than one location at the same time, making them easier to access. One of the other functions provided by or supported by the IT department is knowledge management. Many organisations are using their intranets as repositories for policies, procedures and other corporate documents. This means that staff can only access the most up-to-date versions of documents, with old versions hidden from view but able to be used when needed to investigate complaints and defend against litigation. With paper-based systems, there's no guarantee that you have the documents you need, or if you do, if you have the most up-to-date version of a document, or that, in fact, it is complete, there may be pages missing. A wide range of communications are supported by the IT department. Electronic systems facilitate communications very well. Automated referrals based on data entered into the system, for example, if a care plan for a central venous access device is created for a patient, then an automatic referral can be sent to the appropriate specialist nurse. When a patient is discharged, an automatic letter can be created and sent to their GP, or referrals to external agencies such as social care can be automatically generated. Information management is another function provided by the IT department. Organisations need accurate and timely information. It's critical to their existence. Targets, quality indicators and other activity all need to be monitored and reported on to support clinical care and the administrative processes that support it. Without diagnosis and procedure information, organisations would not be able to produce the invoices required to get payment from purchases. And without clinical information, organisations would not be able to monitor and improve the clinical care provided or benchmark against other organisations. Without electronic systems, an army of clerks will be required to extract and collate information from paper records, which just isn't a practical solution. Electronic systems allow information to be manipulated, extracted, and reports produced extremely quickly, and this just isn't possible with paper-based systems. If the IT department carries out these things efficiently, what we should see are improved clinical processes and care. This means easier and speedier access to a wider range of information than would be available using paper records, as well as automated alerts and warnings, for example, early warning scores. The other thing we should see are improved administrative processes. For example, automated letters, referrals, orders for drugs or equipment, reminders and prompts. We should also see improved internal and external communication. This is achieved through email, automated referrals to services both in and out of the organisation, for example, social care. The majority of computer technology in use in healthcare settings is designed to collect information and present it back to users in a form that will help them do their job more effectively, depending on the job role or function. The information collected in these systems can be used in a number of ways. For example, delivering personal care and treatment, or the day-to-day management of care of your patients, which might include recording observations, creating and accessing care plans, demographic information, assessments and referrals. It's also used for assuring and improving the quality of care and treatment. And this might include clinical audits, reviews by multidisciplinary teams, and benchmarking clinical outcomes against other organisations. Another use of the information is for coordinating NHS care with that of other agencies, for example, social care. Information needs to be exchanged with other organisations as part of the patient pathway. So referrals, discharge letters, appointments and other information might be manually or automatically created and extracted from the systems. The information is also used for effective healthcare administration, for example, things like the Mental Health Act and care program approach. Computer systems are very good at implementing rules and performing calculations, for example, around time limits, identifying particular combinations of information in electronic records, and then generating reminders or alerts. The information is also used for teaching. Care teams regularly use information and case studies taken from patient records as teaching aids. Statistical analysis and medical or health services research is another use of the information. Computer systems are very good at collating and presenting information in custom reports. Organisations have to meet targets and manage services, and to do this they need information presented in a range of different formats, which computer systems are excellent at doing. Information is needed for contracting. It has to be remembered that healthcare is not free, even within and across the NHS and other organisations. Contracts exist between organisations and real money changes hands. Information in the form of invoices and activity reports are vital if the organisations providing the care are to be reimbursed. Likewise, those organisations paying for care, for example, PCTs, need evidence that care has been provided before they can release any money. This is particularly important as organisations are paid on a case-by-case basis, rather than receiving a block of money to cover the delivery of a service, as used to be the case. Information is also needed in terms of performance management. Accurate information about performance against targets, such as the 18-week referral to treatment and the 4-hour A&E wait, as well as performance information generally, is vital so that organisations can demonstrate in their meeting targets, or not, and understand the services they're providing. One of the things that might jump out at you is that the use of information in computer systems for the provision of direct personal care and treatment is relatively minor compared to the use made by managers, support departments such as finance, researchers, purchasers and other organisations for a wide range of other things. So who exactly uses the technology and why? Well, nurses and other clinical staff are the most obvious group. Clinical systems such as Meditech, PCIS and Cerner are used to support the delivery of clinical care and administrative processes. Email is used for communication and the intranet and internet are used to seek out information. Most of the clinical information collected in computer systems is input by clinical staff. These include nurses, doctors and therapy staff. For this reason, it's important that this group have proper training in the use of the systems and the importance of data quality. That is, the correct and accurate information being entered in a timely manner, preferably real time as it happens. If this doesn't happen, then it means any reports produced from the information and decisions made based on them are unreliable. An example of the type of problems this can cause are illustrated in the case study around mortality, which is in the benefits of technology section. Very briefly, what happened was nurses were inputting inaccurate information on discharge, which indicated that patients had been discharged home but were dead. This resulted in an increase in the mortality when figures and reports were produced by the system. Clinical language becomes more important as well. You have to physically handle paper case notes to get information from them, and they're normally in the same location as the patient, so the content is seen in that context. Electronic records can be accessed from anywhere in an organisation, so can be read away from the location of the patient and out of context. Because electronic records are used by many people and professions, the use of clinical terms and abbreviations becomes important. For example, PND can be read as postnatal depression or paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea. The potential for confusion and misunderstandings is greatly increased. It's also important that the importance of security and confidentiality is appreciated. So sharing passwords, entering information on behalf of others, and looking at information that you shouldn't are all likely to lead to problems for the individual. And we will look at these a bit later in more detail. Because of the nature of electronic records, maintaining confidentiality can be a problem. Leaving yourself logged into a computer while you walk away, writing your password down, or accessing information about patients you have no clinical relationship with will all get you into trouble. A couple of years ago, a number of nurses were disciplined for looking at the electronic records of Bobby Robson, who was admitted to hospital. They'd apparently looked at his records out of curiosity and didn't realise the implications of what they were doing. Another group of people who rely on electronic records are managers. They have responsibility for managing services, both clinical and non-clinical. To do this, they need activity information, for example, waiting times and bed occupancy. Without this, it's impractical and probably impossible these days to achieve and monitor targets set by the Department of Health and an organisation's purchasers. They also need clinical information to support quality initiatives such as clinical governance, benchmarking against other organisations, risk management, service improvement and clinical audit. IT and health informatics staff use the systems as well in support of clinical staff and managers. They develop and improve systems to take account of changing information requirements or working practices, as well as managing the data and information and providing reports and statistics. A key role is the training and support of other staff who use the systems and working to integrate use of the systems into clinical practice. It's not enough to put a computer system into an organisation. People need to be trained and they need to change their working practices to include use of the system, and this is the most difficult part. There's a general assumption that using technology will bring benefits to the organisation and to the care of patients generally. It's a little more complicated than just putting technology in place, however. For example, does the investment in technology, which is typically 4-5% or more of an organisation's budget, justify the benefits obtained? Does the spending represent good value for money? Regardless of whether it does or not, a number of benefits have been cited in the literature. Firstly, reduction in the number of repeat or duplicate investigations, so path lab tests, microbiology tests, x-rays, etc. The ready availability of test results that can't get lost means fewer repeated tests and overall cost savings. Improved access to results is another benefit that's been cited. Electronic results are presented in a consistent way and values outside of the normal range are clearly highlighted. Most systems available today will allow you to create an on-screen graph of the results so you can easily see trends over time. A reduction in the amount of duplicate information collected is yet another benefit that's been cited. Information including demographics, alerts, sensitivities to drugs, allergies, clinical information and referrals, once entered into the system, are normally available to anyone else who can access the system. This removes the need for the patient to repeat information to different professionals in the same organisation. Potentially reduced lengths of stay. The overall efficiency is achieved from, for example, the faster availability of test results and automated referrals can contribute to shorter lengths of stay, so freeing up beds and helping to meet targets. Another benefit that's been cited is increased patient satisfaction. The improved access to a wider range of information for healthcare staff usually means they're not asking patients to give the same information more than once, and they're better informed about their care generally. There can also be a reduction in clinical incidents, all of which contributes to a positive experience for the patient. Improved communication and access to information. Automated referrals, alerts, and more readily accessible and legible information available from almost anywhere is a major benefit. The alternative is the old paper case notes, which are easily mislaid, they're handwritten and potentially illegible, and only available in one place at a time. Another benefit is better able to defend against litigation. Because electronic records are legible, the date and time are available, in that records are date and time stamped automatically, investigating complaints and defending against litigation is made much easier. The ability to produce accurate and timely contracting and performance information is another major benefit. The ability to produce this information is vital to maintain the organisation's income and their financial stability, as well as the monitoring of targets and performance. Using technology is not a guarantee that care will be improved, however. Let's have a look at some short case studies where technology played a major role in problems for patients and highlighted some vulnerabilities for organisations. The first is around Bobby Robson and his medical records. In 2008, the Northern Echo reported that nosy nurses had looked at the details of footballer Bobby Robson, who'd been admitted to hospital in the Northeast. It was reported that a significant number of nurses, with no legitimate reason to do it, had accessed and browsed through his clinical records. The trust concerned reported that it sent warning letters to staff, and subsequently it was reported in the newspapers that they had actually dismissed staff over the incident. Another case relates to a divorce. A nurse working in a mental health trust was going through a difficult divorce. His wife was subsequently admitted to the trust that he worked at as an inpatient. The nurse was found to have accessed his wife's clinical notes, presumably in an attempt to find information he could use to his advantage in the divorce. Following an investigation, the nurse was dismissed for doing this. Another example relates to a mortality increase in an organisation, that is, the number of patients that were dying. The performance of organisations around mortality, complications, misadventures, etc. is monitored by the Department of Health, who collects statistics from all hospital trusts and publish the results on a quarterly basis. A trust noticed that its mortality, i.e. the number of patients that were reported to be dying, in one particular specialty had increased by over 400%. An investigation noted some odd entries in the patient's computer records. They'd been recorded as having died, but they'd also been recorded as having been discharged home. It turned out when investigated that the ward clerk would enter all of the admission and discharge information for the nursing staff in this particular area. But the ward clerk had gone on long-term sick leave, leaving the nurses to do it themselves. Because the nurses now saw this as a chore and an extra job, they were skipping through the screens as quickly as they could, picking the first options in the drop-down lists that appeared, which happened to be discharged home and died in this case. The nurses were retrained in the use of the system and the importance of recording information accurately. The good use of technology has the potential to benefit organisations and patient care. However, the poor use of technology can have the opposite effect. Potential issues include things like training. For example, IT and clinical staff might not be trained properly, or be inadequately trained or poorly trained. Poor management, and also a failure to exploit the benefits of the systems that are installed. Let's look at some case studies. The first one involves a 14-year-old boy who was called back to hospital for a colonoscopy. A system trainer from the IT department went to see a consultant physician to train him in the use of a new computerised ordering system for clinical investigations. When the trainer arrived at the consultant's office, he quickly made it known that he only had a few minutes for the session. The consultant was already using the system on his computer to look at some results, so to save time, she didn't log off and use the training system as she should have done, but used the consultant's account in the live system. The training went without a hitch, and the trainer returned to the IT department. 2 weeks later, a 14-year-old boy turned up with his parents at the outpatients department for a colonoscopy. The parents queried why he'd been called in for the procedure when he'd been in hospital previously only for an appendix operation, which had been unproblematic. On investigation, it turned out that the IT trainer had used the boy's record to demonstrate the process of ordering a colonoscopy to the consultant. When she'd finished the training session, she forgot to undo the request that had been placed for the boy, and the system had automatically booked the appointment and sent out the appointment letter. The second scenario involves medication and a child. A staff nurse was doing the medicine round on a children's ward and noted that the dose of medication for a particular child was well over what it should reasonably have been. The nurse did not give the medication and queried the prescription. On investigation, it turned out that the dose of medication had been increased that day by the child's doctor. But the child's doctor was on holiday and had been for a few days. It became clear that somebody had used the absent doctor's username and password to access the prescribing system and change the dose maliciously. Further investigation found the culprit to be a male HCA that was working on the ward at the time. He'd been able to use the system as the doctor because the doctor had written his password under the mouse mat next to the computer. The HCA was subsequently arrested and ultimately went to prison, and the doctor was disciplined. The third scenario highlights the potential vulnerability of hospital computer systems. Normally, hospital systems are not actually in the hospital, but are situated elsewhere, maybe 10, 20, 30, 100 miles away, and accessed via a broadband-type link, similar to the internet. For example, the Meditech system used by the Countess of Chester Hospital is in Warrington, and the PCIS system currently used at Arrow Park is in Warwick. During some building work at the Trust, a JCB dug through the cable connecting the particular Trust to its computer system. The result was a complete loss of access to the clinical records of all the patients in the hospital for over 24 hours. This caused huge disruption and put patients at risk because staff didn't have access to critical information in the computer records. A similar thing happened as the result of the Bunsfield Oil Storage Depot explosion a few years ago. The headquarters of the company Northgate Systems was next to the depot and was seriously damaged. The computers with the clinical systems for 6 NHS trusts were destroyed in the building. Northgate Systems sensibly had backup computers, but unfortunately they were in the same building and were also destroyed. The 6 trusts involved were ultimately without their clinical systems for over 6 weeks. There are a number of pieces of important legislation, guidance, and there are statements in the NMC code that must guide our use of electronic systems. The first guidance is the Caldicott Report. This came out in 1997, following concerns about how personal data was dealt with in organisations. Its aim was to ensure patient confidentiality was not undermined. The report produced a number of principles of good practice to be followed when using patient information, which are now NHS policy. You have to justify the purpose for which you're using personal information. There must be a legitimate reason. Don't use patient identifiable information unless it's absolutely necessary. Use the minimum necessary patient identifiable information. Access to patient identifiable information should be on a strict need-to-know basis. Everyone should be aware of their responsibilities, and everyone should understand and comply with the law. One of the main pieces of legislation you need to know about is the Data Protection Act. This came in 1998 and gives patients the right, among other things, to know whether an organisation has collected and used information about them, a description of the data, and the data itself. It's Department of Health policy that patients who wish to actually see what's written about them or stored about them in their records should be allowed to do so, subject to given exemptions and unless there are compelling reasons to the contrary. 8 principles must be followed when dealing with personal data. Personal data must be obtained and processed fairly and lawfully. Personal data should be obtained and processed for only one or more specified and lawful purposes. Personal data should be adequate, relevant, and not excessive to the purpose for which it's processed. Personal data should be accurate and kept up to date. Personal data should not be kept for longer than necessary. Personal data should be processed in accordance with the rights of the data subject. Appropriate measures shall be taken against unauthorised access, alteration or disclosure of personal data and against accidental loss or destruction. Personal data may not be exported outside the European Economic Area unless to a country where the rights of the data subject can be adequately protected. There are implications for your employer and for you as a nurse. For example, look at Principle 4. Personal data should be accurate and up to date. You have a responsibility to ensure this is the case for patients you're dealing with. Take a look at Principle 7. Appropriate measures shall be taken against unauthorised access, alteration or disclosure of personal data. The message here is quite clearly don't share passwords. And make sure you log out of systems when you're not using them, and make sure you have nobody looking over your shoulder. The other piece of legislation that you need to be aware of is the Computer Misuse Act. This came out in 1990, and it was an act to make provision for securing computer material against unauthorised access or modification and for connected purposes. This is the Act of Parliament that computer hackers are normally prosecuted under. Penalties can be large, can be a fine or a prison sentence. In the context of healthcare, it applies to all trust employees, not just nursing and other clinical staff. It covers any unauthorised access to computer systems. Anyone who attempts to access a system they do not have permission to use is breaking the law. It also applies to users of trust systems who abuse their access privileges. For example, staff who access information about patients they do not have a legitimate professional relationship with are putting themselves at risk of having criminal charges brought against them. The NMC also has something to say on using electronic records. Their guidance on record keeping makes specific mention of electronic records. It says that records should meet the requirements of relevant legislation, including the Data Protection Act and the Caldicott Report. And it also says that authors of individual entries into electronic records should be identifiable. So again, the sharing of passwords is totally unacceptable. It's a requirement of the NMC that we keep our knowledge and skills up to date to practice safely and professionally. In the context of technology in healthcare, it's likely that there are a few skills you may need to learn or to improve. Let's consider IT literacy. We're now expected to routinely use computer rather than paper-based systems in our day-to-day work. Using computer-based systems requires an additional set of skills. It may sound obvious, but you must know how to use a computer, and specifically, the systems and software in the organisation where you work. Turning a computer on, using the keyboard and mouse, knowing how to navigate around the screen, resolving problems with printers such as jams or running out of paper, are all things that you'll need to master if you're to use computer systems safely and effectively. It's also vital that you're competent in the use of clinical systems where you work, as well as your organisation's intranet and other systems. You need to know how to document the care you've provided, as well as look at what care has been provided by others. You need to access assessments, test results, prescriptions, diagnostic images such as x-rays, and of course find other information such as alerts, allergies and demographic information, including date of birth and address. If you can't do any of these things competently, then it will compromise your ability to provide effective and safe care. For example, if you have no idea how to access prescription information, that is, the electronic version of the prescription card, then you can't do a medicine round. Likewise, if you don't know how to create or access care plans, then you're guessing at what care should be delivered, and you can't work effectively as part of the care team. Simple misunderstandings about how a system works or should be used can also compromise patient care. You need to assess where your weaknesses lie in the use of IT and systems and put together a plan to fill the gaps. There are a number of things that you can do. Firstly, the NHS has adopted the ECDL, or European Computer Driving Licence, as the minimum standard for IT proficiency, and courses are usually available free of charge to staff working in the NHS. This will give you the basics of using a computer and software such as word processors, spreadsheets and databases. Your organisation's training department can organise this for you. You can also contact your organisation's IT department if you have a need for initial or further training in the clinical systems you use, as well as email or intranet. It's important to have refresher training when a system is upgraded or updated, so that you know what has changed and if you should be doing something differently, or using the system differently. They should run regular sessions and may even spend time with you on a one-to-one basis. Let's look at legislation. We've covered relevant legislation in the What Do You Need to Know section, but we'll recap briefly here. You need to understand how the Data Protection Act, Computer Misuse Act and Caldecott Report are relevant to your work and how they dictate how you access and use patient information. Your organisation's IT, information management and confidentiality policies will be based around the legislation, so you should look at these. Knowledge management is another important area. Nurses and other healthcare staff need to know more now than at any other time in the past. You must be familiar with legislation, policies, procedures and guidelines, as well as the evidence that underpins best practice. This means you need to be competent and proactive in seeking out the information you need. To do this, you'll need to use the internet, your organisation's intranet, which is usually where policies, procedures and other information is stored, as well as email. Because of the huge amount of information you now potentially have access to, you need to be able to choose that which is important and relevant to your role and disregard that which is not. Information management is another area that you need to focus on. Thanks to computer technology, you also have access to an unprecedented amount of patient and management information. For example, electronic patient records will give you access to structured and organised historical information from a wide range of health professionals and sources, which in the past would not have been available in one place. That information can now be easily manipulated and displayed in the form of text, graphs, charts or tables, and then be used to either inform clinical decision making or to produce activity and other reports that are used by managers. including ward managers, to plan care, improve quality, and monitor targets and spending. Many organisations also have online incident reporting systems that provide information in the form of structured reports that are fed back to users so that incidents can be investigated and prevented. Depending on your role, you'll be expected to use some or all of this information, and this brings with it a need to develop some new skills around finding the information you need and then interpreting that information so it can be used to improve the care delivered to your patients or to assist you in your management of patients, staff or a clinical area. The NHS has recognised that healthcare staff may not have the skills they need to make effective use of the technology being used now and in the future, and in recent years have commissioned competency audits with the aim of identifying the training that may be needed, and they've subsequently published training standards and materials for use by the NHS in support of the National Programme for IT initiative. There are many examples of the use of technology to support the delivery of healthcare. For example, electronic care planning and documentation, electronic communications such as email and automated letters, electronic prescribing and the transfer of prescriptions between GP practices and pharmacies, video streaming and digital photography in dermatology, automated referrals, barcoding, radio frequency ID for medical equipment and even the tracking of patients, communications, document management and decision support systems. Here we present some examples of these in video case studies. Click on the pictures to see the related video. Each of the videos are about 5 minutes in length. When you finish watching the videos, click on the main menu link to return to the main menu. Connecting for Health is probably the highest profile and most controversial of the current initiatives in the NHS at the moment, and has been said to be the largest IT project in the world to date. The Connecting for Health business plan gives a good review of the background and key events that have led to the programme. The programme itself is made up of a number of work streams that address different issues and objectives, and has been called ambitious. The Connecting for Health website outlines the programme and its work streams. And more recently, the responsibility for implementation has been passed down to health authorities. It's useful to look at least briefly at Connecting for Health to understand where organisations have come from and where they're going. Historically, NHS organisations have done their own thing when it comes to IT. During the 80s and 90s, some invested heavily in a vision of integrated systems and others didn't. There were some good, usually local, IT initiatives developed and supported by enthusiastic senior managers, but these were far outweighed by the overall lack of national and local funding and the low priority given to IT at all levels, both in the Department of Health and within individual organisations. It's only relatively recently that organisations have been required to exchange information and provide certain functionality within their IT systems, for example electronic referrals and booking of appointments, and this has meant that some organisations have needed to play catch-up with their systems and have ended up with a mix of systems that do one thing well but don't talk to or exchange information with other systems. For example, a pathology system in an organisation might be totally separate from the outpatient system, which would mean duplication of demographic data in each and users having to be trained in the use of more than one system and having multiple passwords to remember. Connecting for Health has put in place the means for organisations to acquire and implement the integrated systems that they need to meet the national requirements for data sharing and functionality. The main elements of the programme include the following. The NHS number. The NHS number is the only national unique patient identifier used to help healthcare staff and service providers match patients to health records. Everyone registered with the NHS in England and Wales has their own NHS number. The NHS number is essential to a lot of the services provided by Connecting for Health, as it allows patient records and information from different sources to be properly linked. PACS, or Picture Archiving and Communication System, enables images such as X-rays and scans to be stored electronically and viewed on computer screens. creating a near filmless process and improved diagnosis methods. Doctors and other health professionals can access and compare images very easily, and they can be accessed at multiple locations. The NHS Care Records Service. Anyone in the NHS who provides care has to make a record of the treatment that they've provided, either on paper or computer. This service is being developed to bring together this information into a central record that can be shared when necessary by healthcare staff elsewhere in the NHS, not just in a single NHS organisation. The NHS Records Service is intended to provide a quicker way to get important information to NHS staff treating patients, including in an emergency. Electronic prescriptions. This service lets a patient's GP practice send their prescription electronically to where they choose to get their medication or appliance, without the need for paper in most cases. There is less need for people with repeat prescriptions to go to their GP practice just to collect a prescription form, and it makes the process more efficient and safer. NHS Mail is the secure email and directory service for NHS staff in England and Scotland, and it's approved for exchanging patient data with NHS Mail. Staff get an email address for their whole NHS career, accessible anywhere using the internet. Choose and book. Choose and Book is a service that allows patients to choose a hospital or clinic and book an appointment with a specialist. Patients can choose from at least 4 hospitals or clinics and will be given a choice of date and time for their appointment. Choose and Book was first introduced in 2004 and it will eventually be available to all patients. As nurses, we're guided in our practice by the NMC Code and by the legislation such as the Data Protection Act and Computer Misuse Act. The NMC Code sets clear expectations around record keeping, confidentiality and competency. In the context of working with IT systems, there are a number of implications for practice. For example, sharing of passwords. Imagine you give your password to someone else so that they can document the care given to their patients. A few weeks later, there's a complaint made about the care received by one of the patients. You didn't provide the care, but the records are entered against your name in the system. You've probably forgotten who you gave your password to, and they may even have used it since without your knowledge. They may even have made deliberately false or malicious entries. As far as the system and the organisation are concerned, you provided the care in question, and it's then up to you to prove that you didn't, which is potentially going to cause you some serious problems. There are also potential problems around entering information on behalf of somebody else. By doing this, you're accepting responsibility for the care someone else says that they delivered, along with responsibility for any omissions or issues that might relate to that care, now or in the future. Surfing records or looking at the details of patients you do not have a professional relationship with is also going to cause you problems. This is a breach of confidentiality and also constitutes unauthorised access under the Computer Misuse Act, which, depending on the circumstances, could result in criminal charges being brought against you. Looking at your own information in a system isn't acceptable either. You should not look at information about yourself held in computer systems without gaining permission or making a data protection request. Your record may contain information about other people that you should not be allowed to see, or it might contain information which the author thinks might be distressing to you. In a clinical context, making a data protection request does not guarantee you'll be allowed to view all the information held about you. Finally, it's very important that you're competent in the use of technology, just as you need to be competent in the use of medical equipment and in carrying out clinical skills. You must be competent in your use of the computer technology and systems. The consequences of not being able to use IT competently can result in inaccurate or incomplete information, or information being entered in the wrong place. It can also mean that you don't know how to access or where to find the information that you need to care for your patients.